10 years in radio, you learn a lot of random stuff.
Did you hit record already?
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
We will if 2 hours from now you're like, what happened to all the recordings?
Yeah. I did that one time.
Didn't record?
Yeah. Went to Toronto. We had this fancy studio and we recorded for almost 3 hours.
Oh no.
No, you didn't.
And
you visited for 3 hours.
We thought it was recording and it was not.
So what did you do? Did you ask them to redo it?
He just pretended to be all of them and re-recorded the whole thing.
We ended up recording for like an hour afterwards, and we never really used it for anything anyway, but that was frustrating.
I can imagine. Probably wasn't as good the second time around.
No, you can never really recapture
a
conversation.
Yeah.
So we're not going to do that today.
Good.
We're not going to do that today.
We're live.
We're live. So welcome to the Biz Dojo on location. We're excited to be here, the Couliard Group. This is a fantastic office. And joining us today, we've got Jessica.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate you guys coming down to my spot.
Yeah.
It's a nice spot. I would get no work done. I'd be staring out the window all day.
I do a lot of that. I do a lot of staring, thinking about life, staring out the sky.
I've noticed you've positioned your desk in such a way where you're kind of like almost having like your back to the the window. Is that strategic or?
Well, I like to look out, like not at the window, right? And then I can turn around, take my pause.
Yeah. I love a good view.
I also don't like it when people can sneak up behind you from your door.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
That's probably the big thing.
Right? I have heard that that's very bad for productivity. There's been some studies on it where if your back is to the door, it's actually bad for productivity for that reason. You're constantly like, oh, someone
creeping in, you know, hanging in.
Is that in your subconscious or like a conscious thought?
It probably goes between both.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why. Like if you want to see my work emails, like none of them are interesting. They're not interesting me, and I work there.
Yeah.
it's probably partially like the invasion of privacy too. Like you're just, nobody likes to be snuck up on.
Exactly.
No, you just be like,
it's unnerving.
Guarded all the time. Yeah.
I agree though. This would be a good place to be able to think, like looking out to the west and, you know, you get that scenery and you can just take it in and think.
Well, it's like one of the best parts of Calgary, right?
Agreed.
Like our big open sky, especially you get these bluebird days. Yeah. Like you can enjoy it, right?
Where would you say you do your best thinking? I know we should probably dive into an intro right now, but you know.
Sure.
Just going where the conversation goes.
I do my best thinking in the car.
In the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think growing up in Okotoks outside of the city, I drive all the time, right? Some like 3 hours a day isn't uncommon to and from work, driving the kids around. So I like being in the car, and when I'm cruising in, driving into work, that's usually where I do my best thinking.
That's fascinating. Did you have to adjust that during COVID times and find like a new place to do your thinking, or did you just go for random drives?
Did go for some random drives with little kids at home, for sure. So you just had to get in the car.
They were called escapes.
They were escapes, yeah. But we still drove a lot.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
Do you ever find that when you do those drives, whether it be to work or from work, you get half hour, 45 minutes in and you realize you've been sitting in silence the entire time?
Yeah.
Like you have no noise on. I do that often.
Yeah. Or you drive for half an hour and can't really remember like the route that you drove because you were just kind of an autopilot and you wonder, did I go through a red light or was I actually aware of where I was?
You're still alive, so I guess.
Yeah.
I have a whole presentation that I built on like subconscious and conscious in the system one and system two brain that actually talks specifically about that.
Really?
About how you drive to work and you forget because you just do it so often.
Okay.
That it's your subconscious is just taking you through the motions, and that's why that happens.
You did a project on it.
Sure, we'll call it a project.
Okay. This is what JP does in his spare time.
Yeah,
this writes papers.
Yeah, pretty much.
What do you do with the papers? What do you do with them?
I presented on conscious, subconscious bias.
Is that what you read to Declan before bed?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The system one brain.
Interesting.
You should start a Substack with all of your studies and just drop a Substack every week.
I should.
I would read that.
We'll put it in the subscriber-only content.
We are looking for subscriber-only content, so that's a good idea.
Sure.
So, Jessica, maybe like just a quick intro for the folks and in terms of what you do here at Couliard Group and a little bit about you, if we can kind of dive into things.
Sure. Yeah. So I am, you know, as a high level insurance and estate planner, I'm a partner in Couliard Group with my father. He's been in this business for 45 years and I joined him just about 9 years ago. So it's been an interesting transition into the family business. It's not what I did, you know, kind of coming out of school. But it's been really cool getting to, be partners with my father and get to be in this business. Yeah.
With that, what's it been like for yourself to kind of come into this, whether it be family or not, but 45 years is a long time to be running a business, but to have that kind of sort of mentorship, as well as like a, you know, a father-daughter relationship, but a mentorship in the business and kind of the throes of kind of the peaks and valleys of whether it be this business or any other business. But what's that experience been like for you?
Yeah, that's such a great topic because I think that there is this generation of business owners and leaders that are reaching that retirement, you know, phase of life that have built these incredible careers and have so much experience to offer. And I think there's a missed opportunity by people to tap into that mentorship. And so I'm very grateful that that mentorship was just kind of, you know, given to me, it kind of landed in front of me with my father, but also some of the incredible people in our industry who are at that stage that I've gotten to learn from. I just think there's that concept of, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants, that there's an opportunity there for so many people to learn and get to take the pieces and bits of that experience and use it in some new way with your career.
When you came into the business, you said 9 years ago.
Yeah.
He's been in it for 45. So there's, I mean, there's clearly you didn't come in straight out of school.
Yeah.
Was that intentional? Like, I know that sometimes when there's a family business, it's like, I am never going into the family business. Like, that is not going to be my thing. I'm going to forge my own path. And you kind of get, you get sucked into it. Or was it, you know, an intentional path that you would eventually end up here?
It was not an intentional path. But it also wasn't intentional not to come into it. It's interesting when I was, you know, going through university in those years, I just really never considered it. I'm not sure why. But I think growing up, I thought it was pretty boring. Really, all I knew was, what does your dad do? I don't really know. It's not some stuff with money, insurance. I don't know. It's pretty dry. And so when I came out of university, I started my career in commercial real estate. It was an awesome place to be, but just found myself wandering a little bit looking for like that passion for what I really wanted to do long term. So my dad said, hey, why don't you just come take a look at the business? You've never considered it. Just come take a look and see what you think. And so I did, and really quickly fell in love with it. So yeah, it was unintentional.
That's how they get you. That's
totally.
I remember
just a slow drag.
a couple of seasons ago, we talked to Jessica Gale, and she's CEO for Gale's Gas, which is a private petroleum company in Ontario.
Okay.
And her father and her grandfather ran it for years.
Oh, wow.
And she was very much on the, I am never going into this business. Mm-hmm. Like, I am going to forge my own path. Cause she was always Bob Gale's daughter. Like, that was always the thing. But that was very similar for her. When she was talking to her father, he was like, oh, just come take a look. Just come look in the window. See what you see. If you like it, stay.
Yeah. No obligation. Don't feel committed. No commitment. Yeah. Yeah. It was like that for sure.
What did you find that you liked about, or I guess, what did you find that you were maybe looking for and not finding in other places?
Well, for sure, there was like an entrepreneurial pull for me where I really wanted to, you know, be in control of my future by having my own business. And what I was doing before, that just wasn't the path. But also this business is just really incredible for the way that you would get to engage with clients. You really get to know on a super deep level a lot of stuff with clients. And that for me is what makes the difference. I love sitting down at a table and really getting to dive deep into somebody's life with them. I just think that's really a cool opportunity. And then the planning that we get to do with them as a result is really impactful. So I really feel like there's meaning in the work that we do. And that's kind of the passion fit for me.
I think there's a good correlation between that previous experience and kind of the experience coming into this business, is that commercial real estate, it's highly competitive. It's highly, you have to be very self-driven. Can be a little bit cutthroat at times, mm-hmm. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And but it's like that work ethic that's kind of created from that grind.
Yes.
That becomes something that's relatable with business owners. So with the people that you meet, you begin to kind of foster this experience that you've lived through. And now you can just listen. You can listen to their experience. You can kind of get to know them. Like you said, people deal with people. And that mm-hmm. was kind of one of the big messages that from our Jomo Green episode in kind of how to sell. But it's that portion of just being a good listener and understanding their business and their family. And that's probably a kind of a rewarding experience where you can take things away to even apply into your own life. But you probably have quite a vast number of businesses from all spectrums of industries too.
For sure. Yes, absolutely. And I think that, I don't know, we're all human. And I think that as humans, we want an opportunity to tell your story. You want an opportunity to be heard. Right. And there's not always a lot of platforms where you can do that. And so I think given that opportunity, people appreciate it.
And you also want comfort of protection. So
yes,
that's
that
would be a good
fit. You're not going to tell my stories, right?
Yeah,
<that's right. laughs>
yeah.
We had coffee. What was that? Was that like a month ago? A couple weeks?
Yeah. A couple weeks ago.
One of the main things I remember from that was this conversation around like, does your business have a will? And like, have you as a business owner thought about what happens to your company when you retire or whatever? Is that a lot of the work you do here? And I don't know. I just think that's a fascinating topic that I've never really considered. Cause I mean, we're all in our,
yeah, we're babies. We're a baby company.
We're baby companies, younger yeah. companies. In some cases you're dealing with companies that are maybe on their second or third generation owner and I don't know. So just kind of wanted to jam on that and get your thoughts.
Well, I love this topic, and it really is the foundation of all the work that we do. Is, you know, when we were talking about that business transfer, does your business have a will? I think that many business owners, especially as they're getting older, approaching that, you know, maybe retirement place in life, are thinking about that intentional transfer of their business. You know, are they going to sell it? Do they have succession built in? How does that look when I want to take a step away from my business? How does that happen? And I think a lot of business owners plan for that, although some don't. But what is that unintentional transfer? What's the plan for your business when something comes at you that's totally unexpected and you're not able to run that business anymore, whether there's a death, maybe a disability? What's the plan? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a business owner, it's your whole life, right? That you work to build this business. And when there's not a plan there, what happens? Your business gets scattered into the wind. You know, your family's left to kind of pick up the pieces and do something with it, or it just closes its doors. And I just think that's super unfortunate when that business owner has worked so hard to build that legacy, to build that life, to put that plan in place so that you know that it can continue.
How does your team and what you do, how do you help business owners kind of get that plan in place?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's complex, right?
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure it's very individualized, you know, but yeah.
Is it just you as the business owner? Is there partners involved? You know, when there's partners, the conversation gets a little bit more complex, but you know, you're kind of your title, does your business have a will? The will for your business is, you know, your unanimous shareholders agreement, right? And that's going to spell out what happens to your business specifically in the event of all these different things possibly happening.
Right.
Right. So we're going to work with clients to make sure that's in place. And then how does it all actually unfold? How do our funds actually transfer? How does everything actually unfold if that happens?
It's something that's super important and is a good message for anybody that's kind of going down the entrepreneurial road, especially if you have business partners or family members, or if there's more than one person. That unanimous shareholders agreement, or that USA, is a very critical piece. And it's uncomfortable because it sets uncomfortable conversations about scenarios that more than likely won't ever exist, but they could. Mm-hmm. And it's a protection measure, not just for yourself, but for your partners and kind of all of the parties or the investors that may be. It kind of provides the rules to play by effectively.
Yeah.
So that's a fascinating thing that you bring that up, because I think that like in a lot of situations, especially partnerships, so in places where you don't have corporations set up, partnerships you know, the effective equivalent would be the partnership agreement, but a lot of partnerships don't have one. And a lot of corporations in certain cases also don't have a USA.
Mm-hmm.
So things get messy when the inevitable, unexpected occurrence happens. So is part of your kind of world explaining that, or just kind of better helping people understand the importance behind that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're not lawyers, so we're not drafting those USAs, but we're definitely helping clients, you know, get that process started. Or when there is one in place, you know, we're looking at that death and disability section of that agreement and really breaking it down to some real terms. You know, let's break this down. How does this actually read? What does this mean? And to your point, you know, talking about how it's uncomfortable, right? It's super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're talking about your business or whether you're really inevitably talking about your own actual personal will and your family planning, I think to do the right work, to put the right kind of plan in place, you have to go to an uncomfortable place.
Yeah.
Because you have to imagine something really terrible happening. And that's a crappy place to be sometimes, to sit in that and imagine that world. But I really think that it's only from that place that you can really decide how you want things to unfold if something happened.
There's effectively a positive part of that, though, too, because in combination of setting that will or that USA in place or the partnership agreement or whatever it may be, you know, you can ensure, you can provide insurance for
yes.
yourself, and you can kind of go down that road to take that uncomfortable part and then protect everybody in and around that, too. And a lot of it, it's largely financial, and there's a cost associated with it.
Yeah.
But what's the cost of catastrophic loss also?
Totally. And I think that, you know, a lot of people avoid the topic, right? Because they don't want to go there. But really, it's in your, you know, you talk about the subconscious, right? It's in there, right? And people, I think, often worry subconsciously, knowing that stuff isn't taken care of, right? And so, although, like you said, it's uncomfortable, you see, when we work with clients and they put the right stuff in place, there's this relief of thinking, and it's, you know, an accomplishment. Okay, I did this. I know I have, if something happened to me, my family's in good shape. My business is in good shape. I'm not leaving a mess behind me. And there's definitely a sense of accomplishment and relief in having that done.
Is there a certain type of business where you see more opportunity? We talked about partnership. So maybe it's in partnerships, but like the sole proprietor, the partners, the, you know, LLCs, the incorporated businesses. Like, is there somewhere where there's commonly something missed, or is it kind of different for each of those categories?
I think there's, you know, a different, you know, there's different things that are important for each of those structures. So when you talk about the corporation where, let's say, there's three shareholders, if something isn't in place, let's just say there's a death, right? One of those shareholders. If there's not something in place, what happens? If there's a spouse, that spouse becomes the owner with those other two shareholders. Is that what everybody wants to have happen? Did the other two shareholders want to be in business with that other person's spouse? Usually not. Sometimes maybe. But that's just something to be, you know, to ask the question. Is that what the intention is, right? For someone who's maybe a sole proprietor or owns a business by themselves, we don't have that shareholder issue. But then the issue is, if something happens to you, who's running the ship? Right? Is your spouse going to jump in and run this business? Or in a very difficult time, do they have to figure out how to wind up that business? They have to go sell it on the street for parts. What are they going to do with that business? And that's a big undertaking to leave to somebody who's unprepared for that.
Well, and I would imagine in a sole proprietorship, if they haven't gone and done the incorporation and whatnot, it actually connects back to their will.
Yes.
Like their individual will
Absolutely.
As well. It's no longer just a USA. It's whatever's happening there. So it could be the power of attorney could be an issue. The whoever, you know, is listed as the inheritor of your business, whether they want to be or not, becomes an issue. So there's a lot to consider there.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's a big endeavor to do all that planning, because once you do the planning for the business, then you need to trickle down and say, okay, so how does that trickle into my personal life? Right. Then what? Right. So let's say you have those three shareholders. We put some insurance in place so that those other two shareholders can buy out that deceased shareholder. Their family gets that money right away. Fantastic. Then what? Right. Then what does the family do? Is the will done? Do they talk together? Is it correlated? And I think all of it really comes back for me to thinking about your legacy. right? How do you want to be remembered? And we talked about this a little bit at our coffee, right? I think we tend to think about all of legacies for when I'm like 75. I'll think about that. But, you know, I say, if something happened to you tomorrow, would you not care how you're remembered? Would you care any less at this current age than in 30 years?
I have a video in place that will remind people when that time comes.
It's stored in 4 locations. It will be released
around the world. Is that what you were doing in Italy? You're just like time sealing a video?
In Italy.
Just a portion.
Yeah.
Just a portion.
Just a portion. Just part 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Video time capsules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's actually all linked to a map and you have to follow the map and it's a whole adventure.
Geocaching my life.
Yeah, it's a whole adventure he sends people.
He's actually Nicolas Cage. And this is a national treasure type situation.
Being a national treasure could just be a state of mind.
Everything is a mindset. Just ask my family. And then they'll be like, my leg hurts. I'm like, just a mindset.
Just say your leg doesn't hurt and it's over.
You're fine. Drink some water. You'll be all right.
Yeah.
Drink some water. You're my mom now. My headache. Drink some water.
Drink some water.
Got a cold. Drink some water.
Hey, man.
Broke my arm. Drink
water and mindset will get you a long way. That's my legacy.
True. Water and mindset. It's a good one. But yeah, I think when you think about how you want to be remembered, it's a big part of that is if something happened to you, how's that all going to go for everybody that you're leaving behind?
It feels like business is a very dynamic thing, sort of always changing and evolving, growing ideally. So it feels like that. Is that really like an exercise you can just like one and done, or you kind of have to revisit it
always
fairly often?
Yeah.
I guess, how do you lay that out for a client? Like, would it be like an annual review or like every couple of years kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, as always, it's always a little bit different, but for sure, we like to be looking at that stuff every year. Is it the whole full, you know, meal deal review every year? No.
Section 1.4.5.
Yeah. Looks good. Check mark. Yeah. Moving on to the next section. But yeah, obviously changes are happening all the time, whether it's with your family, within your business. So for sure, it's never done. Right. Yeah. And I always say that with my clients, like, this is just a process. Right. And we're never going to get to a place where it is check, check, check. You're done. Thanks for coming in. You know, it's a process. There's always things that are evolving.
People can be added. People can be removed.
People can be deleted.
Yes. Yeah. What do you want to be remembered for?
Who?
You.
Who, me?
Yeah. The guy I'm looking at.
Jeez. That's a tough one. To me, I don't think it matters how I want to be remembered, but I think that I left enough crumbs in place from my time here thus far that would kind of define the characteristics of who I am. So I think, like, you can ask those people and there'd probably be very, you know, there'd be a lot of similarities. And I think that's a kind of a life built with integrity. That's a life built with confidence. It's a life built with kind of like a fun, energetic energy, you know, can be the life of the party, but can also be the somebody that's provides wisdom. And I think that I've created a space for pretty much everybody I know. And a lot of my friends and close relationships where they have a non-judgmental place to come and, you know, talk and seek advice and kind of be a sounding board without really having to say much. But the few things that I will say, I would hope are kind of impactful and kind of reshaping how you think about things. So I think that's kind of that's how I would envision I would be remembered. But I think it would be a disservice to kind of my personality to kind of place that on myself and say, this is how I'm going to be remembered. I think it's how you're remembered is, it's the perception that's left over periods of time in different stages of your lives. And I think the thing is that you have to remember is that you're not always your best self in any situation or any year. Your circumstances change, how you think about things change, your own emotional intelligence changes over time. So there's going to be so many different views, both good and bad. But I think at the root, kind of at the very center of your being, I think that, you know, that generality is going to stay kind of fairly consistent through those years and through those groups. So that's how I look at it.
I think you're really fortunate to feel that confidence in that. And I think it really speaks to, I always think about with legacy, when you think about those concepts of how you might be remembered or how you want to be remembered, it really governs your life, right? Because how you're living your life, that's what is going to dictate that legacy. So I think you're very fortunate, and it speaks to kind of living a life on purpose, that you feel content with that and confident with that.
Yeah, I think it's your, I think a legacy is built in small increments.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a value. It's much like a business, like any business. When you get a group together, you have a mission and you have values and you set them in place. And those are actually part of the USA a lot of times. But it's incremental. It changes
mm-hmm.
and it evolves, as does everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Well, I think it's interesting too. Like you can't control or even understand how someone else is going to view you. Right.
No.
'Cause like, so it's, I don't know. That would be a tough place to live if you were just trying to like build a legacy based on what other people thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you're talking about, like living a life of integrity and living the best version of your life that you believe in, and as you grow and evolve, like then like the crumbs and the residue from that. And I think about a lot, like people don't remember what you say, they remember how you made them feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if in most interactions you can make people feel or help people feel more good than bad, like, I don't know, I think that's a pretty good barometer of whether you're living a life of integrity or not.
I think just the exercise of considering it is, I guess, like a barometer and a little check-in, because I think there may be circumstances in someone's life where when they think about that, maybe they aren't really happy with that, with what their observation of themselves is in that moment in time, and it can drive them to do something better, right?
Mm-hmm.
It can also improve their relationship with their self.
Yeah.
You know, like it can also provide an opportunity to, you know, reflect on why don't I view myself in mm-hmm. a certain lens
mm-hmm.
and kind of identifying, like, well, what are the reasons? Like, give me a good reason.
Yeah.
Write it down.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, there's no more on the positive side than the negative side when you write it down and you reflect on that.
I would say almost always there's more good than bad.
As there should be.
For sure.
If you actually like take the time to think about it.
Yeah.
Have you seen that new Jonah Hill documentary with his therapist on
I've
Netflix?
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it.
What's it called? Have you seen that?
I have not.
It's called like, I can't remember. It's the last name of the therapist, but he has a, it's really interesting. But one of the exercises was basically this pyramid. And he said 85% of like feeling better and doing better in your life can be distilled down to the relationship you have with your body. That's sort of like the bottom of the pyramid. So like exercise and feeling good, mm-hmm. your relationships with others. And then the top of the pyramid is just relationship with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can start to work on like those three elements, like that's the majority of what makes people feel good and operate at their highest level.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's a super interesting documentary.
Yeah.
What's interesting about that too is like the interaction between the three. Like if you have really good friends that can help support the other two,
yeah.
Or if you have really good self-confidence that can help support the other two, like it just brings everything up.
Yeah.
So. Well, I know what I'm doing later.
Hanging out with us.
Well, I meant later.
Oh, you're gonna watch a doc.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I follow.
That's your Friday night.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's changed slightly over the
You'll have
over
some
the
new
years.
Bedtime reading for Declan. You can
yeah.
tell him about this pyramid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we'll do. After we talk about the conscious and subconscious, we'll have a quick little view of Netflix with my three-year-old. He'll be right into it.
It's going to be a deep three-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that your conscious doesn't want to sleep, but your subconscious is going to love this Himalayan singing bowl.
So I think we're jamming on the personal legacy side. When you talk to businesses about legacy and purpose, and I'm sure values and all that kind of stuff comes up, what do you find there's any common issues or challenges? I'm assuming, especially when you have like partners coming together, like language and like determining co-values and stuff like that, do you see a lot of rub in those areas, or do you usually find most people are kind of on the same page, at least to start from, when you build out these kind of things?
Yeah, on it, when there's shareholders, actually, I think it can be easier because it's a pretty clear answer usually. What's going to happen to your business? Well, the other shareholders are going to keep running it. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder when someone owns a business on their own to, you know, sometimes there isn't as clear of a path about what to do with that business, you know, whether they're alive and they want to sell it or whether it's a death or something. I think that can be more challenging. And we see that a lot where a business owner, you know, wants to have some succession, but just doesn't know how to go about that. I think that can be a challenge.
I would think especially like owner operator, if you're like, so what do you do with that? What happens to those businesses? Do they just close, or do they like go to like an auction, or like, what do you do? Like, you have a fully formed functioning business. That person passes away, gets disabled, whatever.
Yeah.
What happens to the business?
Well, it depends on what kind of documentation's in place, right?
Yeah.
It depends on the family. Is there someone who's going to jump in? But yeah, certainly there's times where that family's just going to close the doors, right? They're going to get some involved. They're going to sell it off. And I know for us in our own company here, right, we've kind of been living some of this stuff in our discussions with my dad about succession planning, right? Mm-hmm. So we've kind of been on the other side of the table, which is an interesting experience when you're always on the other side. But I think what I really took from the experience going through this with him is that this is his life's work, right? And he could just go sell it somewhere and kind of wash his hands and be done with it. But that's really not what he wants to do, because he wants to see what he built continue. And so that's, I think, for a lot of owner operator, especially, they want to see what they've built continue on. They want to know that it has an opportunity to keep going into the future.
That could be tough, I could imagine, for situations where maybe the person that they would hand it to doesn't want it.
Yeah.
You know what? And the other thing too is, I get it from like from his point of view, just like through some personal relationships, like I've seen it and kind of watched it kind of unfold before. But in your business, like in this business, you create relationships.
Yeah.
And that succession planning and like that discussion that you're talking about that you guys are living as a company and as a family, you guys have built relationships with other families and other businesses that are doing effectively the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the business lives with the values of what you've kind of been working with and as a company, you know, succeeding with these other businesses. So like that would be hard for me to let go as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think you ever truly let it go. I think you kind of watch it continue to grow and you mm-hmm. kind of continue to watch it kind of participate. But I mean, if I can, I would never make any assumptions, but I would imagine that your father's the type of person who kind of appreciates that and like likes to be involved and likes to know what's going on and is participating.
Totally.
Because those relationships with maybe other fathers or even mothers for that matter, or couples that have created businesses that their family mm-hmm. works for, you know, there's a lot of pride in that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That family business is a kind of a different beast, right? When you have family members in there, it's a whole other little thing that's happening.
The conversations are a little bit more blunt, I find.
Well, they could actually just be a lot more confused because there's so much emotion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's another thing that's interesting to go through it on the other side of the table is that, you know, it's easy for an advisor like myself or a lawyer, an accountant to sit across and say, the solution is clear. Here's what you have to do. Just put it in place. But then, you know, it takes years and people wonder, why aren't they just doing this? And it's because there's so much other stuff going on.
Yeah.
It is not black and white, right? There's so much emotion and there's so many kind of interpersonal factors at play there. It is not simple. And even though the solutions look clear from the outside, they're not that clear always from the inside. So I love that because it's really interesting. And it's a really cool opportunity to see generations working together. But it's complex.
Do we need to have like a succession planning meeting? Declan, Lyndon, Jovi at the table?
Yes.
Yes.
Declan's going to have all the subconscious and conscious stuff.
Well, he's so already going to have that.
He'll take the coaching portion of the business.
He'll be ready.
Perfect. Lyndon's got a fairly successful YouTube Shorts channel right now.
Oh, but they could probably run the business better than us at this point. So why aren't we just bringing them in now?
Just hand it off.
Yeah.
Right? I could see Jovi doing business development. I mean,
she's just going to tell people how it is.
Yeah. So just show up.
This is what you're going to do.
Absolutely.
I just imagine like you and your father sitting at the table and just setting up a mirror and like self-advising.
I know. We've had some interesting times. I mean, we get along incredibly well. But yeah, it's interesting to work through it. Yeah.
I imagine it's like you discover things about your own practice when you sit down at a different practice or with somebody else and walk through it. And you're like, oh, these are good ideas. Or, oh, these are things that we will never do in our business.
Well, it's good. You got to walk the walk, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you're advising clients to do different things, you do have to take a look in the mirror and make sure that you're doing those things. And then you can experience from your own side what the challenges are in those recommendations, right? What are some of the things that it invokes for you? And then you can even better understand what your clients are going through.
Did you have any like shifts, or have you had any shifts of perspective or learnings sort of going through that process with your dad versus just sort of the day-to-day of running your business?
I think, like I kind of mentioned it, the biggest thing that came out of it for me is just, you know, how complex these decisions are for clients. And to have more appreciation for, you know, when clients stall or when they don't get things done or it feels like they procrastinate, really have a better understanding of why that might be. Obviously, the situation for everybody is different, but just to appreciate that there's a lot more going on, right? And it just takes time.
Yeah.
Do you find, too, that there's like a skill or like an art to taking something as complex as it is, as like whether it be these situations or the paperwork or kind of reading through the legal jargon, if you will, but being able to like explain that at a relatable level?
Yes.
Like that's probably a big part of your role and kind of your communication styles.
Yeah.
Is how do I explain this the most efficiently so that it's fully understood?
Yeah. Well, we always talk about like above the line planning.
Yeah.
Right. And you get below the line, you're in the weeds, right? You're into all the technical stuff and that's really important for your solution. But you have to get above the line to get clarity on like what is trying to be accomplished here. And I think that's where we have an opportunity to give people clarity, is to say, forget all this technical stuff, right? All the legal jargon, all the accounting, all this stuff, all the numbers. What are we trying to accomplish, right? At a high level. And then I think once you have real clarity on that, then all those solutions, then you can sit with your advisors and say, got it, let's do it. But it's when there's not clarity there that there's a stall.
Yeah. Money does not get spent on uncertainty.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
One is that... is that part of how you simplify or distill that down for people? Is that legacy conversation? Like, what do you want to have happen here? Like, is that sort of how you lead that conversation?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of different parts of the conversation. I mean, it's not always about the legacy. It's also about that living conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do we hope happens here?
Right.
What do we hope unfolds for you over the next number of decades, right? Because there's a good chance that that will happen. And then... how do we protect for that? How do we create that safety net? And then, yeah, for sure, that legacy conversation is a big one. But also planning for like the hopeful circumstance, right, is a big part of it.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with exit strategies in general because I feel like people don't want to think about that because you just kind of want to focus on here and now and getting where you want to go. But like, what do you ultimately hope to accomplish, or you know, how are you going to? Because everything ends.
Yeah. See, and I'm the opposite. I work backwards from, especially when you talk about businesses and like, you talk about the, like creating a business or entrepreneuring yourself into a situation or, kind of whatever it may be. I work backwards. Like, okay, what is the exit? Like, what is the eventual goal here? Is it acquisition? Is it full sale? Is it just making enough cash where you could just leave? I mean, effectively, like that's the difference between starting a business and starting a job is working yourself backwards from like, what is your end goal here? And like from that point though, I feel like you can create a more effective roadmap to get there and just identify the amount of work and competition that's involved in that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if you haven't established where you hope you're going to end up, you can't build all the provisions of the just in case scenarios, right? So you have to know where you're hoping to go, right? What do you want to have happen with this business? Do you hope that one of your kids takes it over? Do you hope that you get acquired by, you know, a big conglomerate? What do you hope happens? And then build the safety net so that if something gets derailed, maybe you can still accomplish that goal, right?
Yeah. There's a book. I say there's a book I'm reading. There's an Audible book I'm listening to.
Same thing.
Same thing. Yeah.
There's a book someone's reading to me.
Yeah. Rick Rubin is reading it to me, actually. And I just thought of that because this is more in like the creative process. But basically, one of his theories was if you have the inspiration to write something, he said, always finish your first draft. Because if you can see the start and the end of something, it's easier to build a bridge in between. So you kind of know where you're going and you know where you are, and like you can build a bridge between those two points.
Yes.
So anyway,
that's kind of how I write.
Is it?
I usually write the last part first because that will tell me like where I need to get to.
Who told us that trick? Was that Terry?
Yeah.
O'Reilly? Yeah. That's a fact.
He told us a lot of tricks.
He did. Yeah. So
start at the end.
Would you say, are you a writer, like a by nature? Is that kind of your...
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Seth will agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've won 8 awards for the podcast.
Yeah. All writing awards.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting about ability to share ideas now, even what you guys have here with your platform, is that I think some people convey their message really well with words, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously you do, right? But I think other people are much better spoken. So I think you have these platforms now where you can share that book of ideas without having to be a writer.
Rick Rubin can read it for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Seth will listen to it.
That's all I want in all of my life is just Rick Rubin reading me things. But the thought of writing an essay makes me like physically ill. I can do it, but like it is like very low on the list of things I like to do.
I wouldn't put it as something I'm looking forward to doing on my weekend. No.
No.
Well, and you know, we'll put this nugget in the middle of the episode here, but the trick for writing for contests is really understand what your judges are looking for. Yeah. Like understand, if you can understand who is receiving the message and what they plan to do with it, the world is your oyster in writing. And it's no different, like I could use that same strategy in business. Like I know what my reader is wanting from the message, so I cater the message to how they're going to read it and what I want them to take away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing with judges. Works consistently.
Evidently. I got to go to Vegas on behalf of your writing, so thank you.
No problem.
Well, this has been so cool.
Yeah.
I have another question though before we wrap up.
Okay.
From your experience having being involved in this business yourself and being a leader in this business too, you're obviously in discussion a lot with leaders of all kinds of different businesses. Of the most successful ones that you've met and that you kind of have relationships with, what's like a quality or trait that you've kind of taken away from those types of people or those types of relationships?
Mm. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
The first thing that just popped into my mind, you know, we work with businesses also on their benefits and employee things. And I think the leaders that I look at and think, wow, they've built an incredible business or they have an incredible thing going for them is how they treat their team, right? When you walk into a business and you're walking around with a business leader and they know everybody and there's obviously just this incredible rapport and the people are happy there. They want to be there. And from the work that we see with the business owner, they want to do well by their team, right? And they value them as people and as part of the reason why they're successful. I think that's a big thing, right?
Yeah.
You cannot, unless you're a business owner that just does your own thing, like a contractor or something. If you have a team, you're not successful without them. You can't run your business and achieve your goals without them. And so I think viewing them as critical people, right? I think is really necessary.
Love that.
Yeah. What do you think?
For sure. I 100% agree. I think the thing is like the, and we can even reflect on, I'm big on mentorship. Like I'm big on, and the reason I say that is kind of, there's some history behind it too, is that I had a really unique and exciting opportunity as a young adult. So like, I went to school, finished school, kind of got a job. I basically cornered the guy who was hiring at the arena. Yes, this is a very small town story. At the arena, he was coaching
Wainwright.
He was coaching his son. I literally went onto the bench while practice was on, and I'm like, "Hey, I know you have this job. I want this job. Like, I'll just start from the big ground floor. So that's from, but what I was looking for is I knew that this person kind of was affluent in their job and was like, you know, perceived as being kind of successful. And I more valued that kind of opportunity to gain mentorship at a young age. And because, like, I mean, I was a gong show at the time, and he would attest to this too, yeah, to this day. But like, there's values and there's lessons I learned, you know, at 23, 24. And then I got moved. They moved me to Calgary here at 24.
Okay.
So I was I was 24, I was single, and I was in a super highly competitive environment. And I had a great mentor here who was on the pod earlier with Joel McGreen, and then kind of Aaron, who was my leader at home. But that mentorship was like a huge thing for me. And then, you know, as things transpired, as you kind of go through your career, I spent 6 or 7 years there. And not that the mentorship dwindled, it just changed. Like, it, you change leaders and you change cultures and change organizational kind of structures just based on growth and how different things operate, and people kind of move in their own directions too. And I think that there was a period of time, you know, where I had gained another mentor who kind of took me on as a young guy to kind of give me an opportunity to kind of do what I did best, which was connecting with the people and the customers. And I think the thing is like, there was a gap in time where I didn't necessarily have some mentorship, where I was kind of on my own a little bit. And it's the thing that I kind of missed the most. I didn't miss, like, anybody, you can be an employee or you can get a job or you can be part of a business, but mentorship with people who care, yes, is such a huge, it's impactful, because yeah, I've never once considered that I know everything about anything. And it's just like, I just love learning so much from people, that culture that's created by the comfort to make. The biggest thing is the comfort to fail. And have it be represented as not as a failure, but as a learning moment.
Yeah.
And kind of the coaching and the education in behind that. And I know that this is what you guys are very prominent for in your roles too, is coaching people, mm-hmm, and coaching them through that. And that's what mentorship is. It's just, it's coaching, it's life, it's empathy, it's all of those things combined. But that's just like the nature of a good person, you know? And I've worked for all kinds of different people and worked with all kinds of different people. And you can really see the people who are admired, and those are the qualities, and kind of it's reflecting for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just as like a sidebar, I feel like there's like a podcast within the podcast of like Jessica asking Sean questions that I'm just really enjoying right now.
Just turns the table.
Kind of, yeah. I like it. You might have a future in this whole thing if you want to go down this path. Very, like, very, very nice question asking.
I like asking people questions.
I see,
yeah,
that.
My husband always makes fun of me because he goes, you know, you just sit beside someone and all of a sudden they told you their life story. And I think they walk away feeling a little uncomfortable.
A little bit of vulnerability hangover. Yeah. Yeah.
It comes back to like why I kind of fell in love with this business. I love getting, you know, to the root of things with people. I think it's so interesting to learn people's stories. Right.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like to hear your guys' stories.
I think it'd be a great podcaster, but, we can talk about that later. So the final question we've been asking this season, the bonus Soapworks question of the week, I guess that sounds right.
That sounds
like a thing.
Yeah, sounds like I hit the nail on the head there with our sponsor.
Good. The Calgary's Adventure Soap Club. You can head to bonussoapworks.ca or .com. Try both.
Type all the things.
Just type in bonus Soapworks on the Google and you'll find Mel Basito and the amazing things she's doing.
You know what? She's check in the notes for this episode where I will tag them and you can just click the link.
That works too.
She's probably great. Be easier. She's a great follow on Instagram too. If you have Instagram, she's bumping on there.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay. Also, don't forget to follow Beyond a Beaten Path, our title sponsor this season, and check out last week's episode where we had Mama Seth on. Very inspiring episode. But anyway, all that to say, question of the week, what is your favorite song?
Favorite song. You can only pick one?
I mean, you can pick as many as you want, but we're only going to add one to the playlist.
Okay, one to the playlist. I'll go with Xavier Rudd, Follow the Sun.
I don't know that song.
Have you heard it?
Yes.
Yeah?
It's a very good song.
No matter what your mood, like if you're having a horrible day or you're having the best day, it's one of those songs you like roll down your windows and you're going to feel good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love it.
I dig it.
Yeah.
That whole album's like, it's a great album.
Yeah, it gets a little wacky.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But it's good.
But yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's not the same song over and over again. That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
I like albums like that.
Yeah.
What else is on your playlist?
Well, I'm a big country girl, just, okay. You know, mm-hmm. Small town Alberta. So a lot of Chris Stapleton be on the playlist. And probably some Tragically Hip.
Awesome. Hip.
There we go.
Right?
Nice.
Just a whole, I have three brothers. So I kind of grew up, I had like forced to listen to like all the rock and, but yeah.
If you like country music,
you
got to listen to, there's a local guy that's from my hometown.
Okay.
I used to teach him golf as a kid. But he's just a great guy. He's a great follow on Instagram too. Ryan Lindsay. He was on.
Also a Paulette alumni. Yeah.
Ryan Lindsay.
Unbelievably talented. Oh, young man.
I'll check him out for sure.
There you have
it.
Yeah. And I guess lastly, anyone who wants to learn more about what you guys do and get in touch, what's the best way for people to do that?
Sure. Our website is coolart.ca and our Instagram is Coolart Group. Yeah. And all our contact is there. Yeah.
PJ will make sure to put that in the notes too.
I shall.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. But we love working with business owners and
Awesome.
Perfect.
Well,
awesome.
Thanks
Thank
so much
you
for
guys.
Having us today.
This is really fun. I'm so glad we did it in person.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, we were talking about this, like Zoom is great, right? It's a great platform when you need it. But I just think the ability to like sit at a table with people is 10 times better.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming in.
This is my jam.
Yeah, this is Sean's first live pod.
Yeah.
So
for sure. Although I feel like I've done thousands of live pods without the microphones at happy hour.
Yeah.
That's Sean's new ones. Pod, happy hour.
Yeah. Happy hour with Millie. You're coming on.
I bet you that would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.